Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to another episode of the Daily Friend Wrap. I'm your host, Nicholas Lorimer, today joined by Saragon. Let's get into our first news story of today, and this is on the back of a parliamentary question asked by DA MP Toby Chance. He asked the Minister of Trade, Industry and Competition, Parks Tau, what all of South Africa's overseas trade councillors are doing. How many are there? Where are they positioned? And in the reply, Parks Tau revealed that while South Africa has positions for 45 trade councillors in various offices around the globe, that as of December 2023, there are currently none anywhere, including in countries like China, the US, India, Germany, France, some African and Asian countries. Now, there's an argument perhaps to be made about whether these guys actually, are effective or whatnot, but if you're going to have the positions, you might as well fill them. And this, I think, Sarah, raises the sort of broader question, what exactly is the point of our foreign affairs department, of our trade, of our sort of government infrastructure for dealing with other countries?
Well, I would say that probably the most important thing that our foreign representation can do is be involved in trying to improve trade relations between us and the host nation. I mean, almost everything else is probably pretty much, except for the story, but is pretty much technical and administrative. Consular officers providing visas, et cetera, passports, whatever, that sort of application. Given how, I mean, I suppose this is what we would call net zero, to have no trade representatives anywhere. I mean, why they would all have, because there doesn't seem to be anything clear about what sort of length of term they have, why they would have all ultimately been recalled, end up back in South Africa at the end of December or December 2023. While, if I can understand what's been said correctly, the Department of Trade, Industry and Competition relooks at how they operate and how they, I suppose, what policies they follow, et cetera, et cetera. Well, that had to be a disaster, A, because you had a new government coming in May. Either, would have been a disaster, probably a disaster anyway. And B is our foreign policy is, I'm not sure if we had a trade policy that aligned with our foreign policy. It would be a waste of time in many places. And it's been shown up, of course, in horrific glory, gory glory, with Trump's trade policies and sudden tariff implementations. I mean, we're literally not geared to respond either diplomatically or in terms of trade. And, we don't have, to be at that sort of disadvantage strikes me as being extraordinarily awful. And I mean, I don't know why the department couldn't have left everyone in place until they had decided what they needed to do with their policy in this regard.
Exactly. And it's also sort of raises the question, well, it's been over a year now. How long does this review take? And I think this is, the case in so many government departments. You get a report, you get a process to discover what's going on, and that drags on and on and on, and then it's delayed, and then it's disputed, and then in the end of the day, basically nothing happens.
And
Building
I
trade
suspect
relations,
that part of
building.
that, yeah, I suspect that part of that review had to do with the fact that you had the fallout of China, of our relationship with China, Russia, and Iran, starting to happen,
Yes.
or particularly with China and Russia, during the course of 2023. So the whole relationship with the USA got, or the West, became more strained.
Yes. No, just, complete misalignment of the government's goal, supposedly, of getting all this foreign direct investment, where apparently the president goes around and gets wines and dines with various executives and things, gets sort of vague promises about investment, and then it never really comes. And I mean, there's a lot of reason for that, but the fact that we're, not even trying properly, I think says something about that. Okay, let's move on to our next one. This is about the city of Joburg and Eskom. Now, in November of 2024, a couple of months ago, it made headlines. We talked about it on this show that the city and Eskom were in a dispute. City Power in Johannesburg said that Eskom was, I believe, overcharging them. And Eskom said, we're not, you need to pay the money or else we are going to cut Joburg off from power supply. Well, there was some intervention by the electricity minister and things sort of quietened down for a little bit. There was a review to kind of work out what exactly was going on. The South African National Energy Development Institute conducted an independent assessment of the disputed amounts, and the report was expected by the 25th of November, 2024. Well, the report only came 4 months later, so much later than it was supposed to. And the minister has not made it public, so we don't actually know what it said. But now the city of Joburg has gone entirely around and said that actually, no, it's not going to pay after initially saying that it would talk to Eskom about paying. And Eskom is once again threatening to cut the city of Joburg off because Eskom relies significantly on the money it makes from selling electricity to Joburg. So if Joburg doesn't pay, Eskom's finances are in a really bad state. So, you know, once again here, something being delayed, mysterious process, reasons not explained properly by government. And all we get is dysfunction and mismanagement.
Well, I think that the last intervention, there were actually expressions of hope about the fact that the parties were finding each other and there seemed to be some sort of resolution on the horizon, which struck me as a bit odd given how bankrupt the city is, where it was going to find the money to pay billions that it owed to Eskom. I'm not quite sure, but, you know, better financial minds than I might have had an idea. But so I'm not at all surprised that they've got absolutely nowhere. And if you link back to the story last week of the way in which City Power is being managed, or rather mismanaged, there are three senior officials under investigation. I suspect it's some form of investigation or disciplinary hearing going on at the bargaining council level, because one of the main people lied about her qualifications. She said she got certain qualifications from UNISA. They say, well, they can't say anything, but they don't actually offer those qualifications. And it's just been such an enormous sight, not unexpectedly, of corruption and tenderpreneurship that you literally, I think with most of those significant entities within City Council and City Power in particular has been notorious for being all of the bad things we've come to expect from an ANC, EFF, et cetera, administration. No, nothing's been resolved. Nothing's been changed. It's just been allowed to sort of manage by through rot. And so I've no doubt we'll see problems, and it will, you know, we'll probably see the crisis we need to see something really dramatic happen. But I'm not surprised at all.
I think Joburg is going to be possibly the key, or certainly one of the key battlegrounds of the next local government election. I do not think the great municipal crisis that is developing in Johannesburg is going to go away anytime soon. And it's going to be an interesting test of, you know, how voters are looking at this thing. The ANC is in the last election in 2021 got about 33% of the vote in Joburg. So it's already not, you know, it's already holding on to the city by a complicated coalition. Action SA got about 16%, the DA 26%, and the EFF 10%. Of course, MK wasn't formed by that time. But there's some indications from the Brenthurst Foeling Foundation that the DA may now be up into the 30s in terms of support in Joburg. It's still very difficult exactly to work out what's going to happen. Will things continue in this direction? You know, is the parties out of government going to be able to consolidate support? Or is the ANC and its allies going to be able to hold on? And I think that's something to watch very closely for how the next national government elections are going to go. They'll be informed, I think, a lot by this by-election. Yeah. Okay, our last story. This is a relatively small protest, about 70 educators and principals, mostly from informal settlements around Johannesburg, marched to the offices of Mayor Dada Marrero on Tuesday, demanding that the bylaws around creches, that is childcare centers, be changed because they are too strict. The demonstration was led by the South African Congress for Early Childhood Development. And their representative said, "We feel the bylaws are too strict. They don't consider the needs of the child." Quote, "We say, please review the bylaws like zoning in townships and informal settlements. Many early childhood development centers operate in unproclaimed and tribal lands, but are expected to have approved building plans, title deeds, and site zoning certificates, which delay the process of qualifying for subsidies while the needs and interests of children suffer." A woman called Mavis Malese from Protea South Informal Settlement says she's been running the Itumeleng Day Care Center for 18 years and takes care of 81 children. But she's been unable to renew her permit for the past 2 years. Interviewed, she said, quote, "Inspectors told me I need to reduce the children in my daycare because I need to follow the bylaws so I can qualify for the nutrition subsidy. But that means many children will have nowhere to go because the informal settlement is densely populated." She says when she tried to get her permit renewed, they keep delaying her. So she says she's forced to work without a permit. Now, Sarah, I'm not particularly warm to most zoning rules in general. I think that they often tend to be too strict. I do obviously see the argument for having strict controls over the environment under which children are able to, you know, live. You don't want children in some horrible, rusty building where they're all at risk of getting tetanus or some other horrible thing happening to them. But at the same time, we're not really, you know, the big problem in South Africa is not that our laws are not strict enough, is that our laws are not properly enforced. And I do feel the pain here of these educators who are, you know, trying to make the best in very difficult social circumstances, support kids, look after kids. We know that early childhood development is really important for children, you know, making sure they're fed, making sure they get some basic building blocks of education. But I don't know. What's your take on this story?
Well, you know, I think the problem is it suggests it's an aspect of land and land ownership and the contradictions within it, that, you know, about private land ownership versus communal or tribal land ownership and all the complexities that come with that, that particularly with those that make the individual who should be able to own their own property virtually impossible to comply with anything. I do know that, and I think Itumeleng was one of them, that, you know, so some years ago I was involved in a trust that did early childhood development, and the purpose of the trust, and there were a number of organizations similar, was to train essentially what were really babysitters for people who worked in townships and informal settlements to become properly run creches. In other words, they would work through curricula, get a qualification, and then move up the next ladder, so that the actual process of turning those essential just childcare centres into actual ECD centres, at least on that level, from a point of view of looking after the children and providing them with the sort of basics that would do, which would do well for them going into formal schooling. That side, you know, the private sector has done an amazing amount of work. Social development's done work too, but it doesn't surprise me that the area that these women are protesting against is the area that they have the least amount of control in, and in which the private sector would need huge amounts of money to get involved in sorting out. And one can't help but wonder to what extent their lives are made difficult because the land is wanted unscrupulously by others for nefarious purposes. And I think that's very unfortunate, because some of these women have, you know, do an amazing job considering the limitations that they face and the families that need the support so that they can go out and earn a living.
Right. This kind of service is just absolutely vital for the economy, for these very poor communities where, you know, you can't afford to miss work, you can't afford to hire someone else. Maybe you don't have relatives who are available or you can trust to look after these kids. So, you know, when you unfairly close down something like this, you really put stress and strain on families. Mm-hmm. And you can, you know, keep people trapped in serious poverty that way. But I think we once again here see sort of all the kind of the facets of government failure in South Africa. You know, you've got a combination of lack of enforcement, but also over strict rules. So anyone who tries to follow the rules gets punished, but people who fly under the radar get away with it. You know, you have government taking forever to do the basics, like issuing a permit or something like that. You have these kind of lofty ideals of, oh, we're going to have all these zoning site plans and all these things, which don't comport with the reality of how a lot of people live their lives on the ground. You know, the rules should be much simpler. Yeah. It should be like, are the children in danger of being, you know, sliced up by heavy machinery? If the answer is no, then it's probably fine. But anyway, any final thoughts before we close up for today?
No, just to say that, you know, it's particularly the poignancy is added to by the fact that it's compulsory now for every primary school to have grade R. And to a large extent, the ECD centres do provide some of what grade R is supposed to, and not all schools will be able to afford to do it or have the capacity to do it. So this just possibly exacerbates even more the attempt to make children school ready.
Yes. Okay, that's all the time we have for today. We hope you found the show interesting, and we will be back on Tuesday next week. I hope you all enjoy the long weekend, and that's a wrap. The Daily Friend Show and The Daily Friend are a project of the Institute of Race Relations, the IRR. The IRR is a think tank which was founded in 1929 to study race relations in South Africa and works to change government policy to improve race relations through non-racialism and to ensure the prosperity of all South Africans. If you like our work and would like to support us, please go to irr.org.za and click Support the IRR, or you can go to thedailyfriend.co.za and click the Fund Us button.